It's Friday, August 9th. This is The Gateway. I'm Brian Moline. Residents of Ferguson, Missouri say there have been some positive changes in the city since a white police officer killed Michael Brown Jr. 10 years ago, but there's so much more to do.
Until the system that we are fighting against is dismantled and a new system is created, we are fighting an uphill battle.
St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson spoke with Black people in Ferguson about its progression and challenges. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Missouri State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick says his office has fast-tracked plans to audit the St. Louis Public School District after concerns about a projected $35 million deficit. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley has more.
As concerns about student transportation, hiring, and financial woes at SLPS have unfolded recently, Fitzpatrick says his review of the district's finances will begin next week. Board of Education leaders voted a week ago to place Superintendent Keisha Scarlett on leave, pending a third-party investigation into a personnel matter. St. Louis Mayor Tashara Jones last week cited Scarlett's hiring decisions and the district's finances while calling for a state audit. Democratic State Representative Donna Beringer says the problems plaguing the district hurt students.
This is not a time where we have time to spare. We have got to focus on what's in the best interest of the children in the city of St. Louis.
Fitzpatrick says the audit is part of a larger effort to inspect more schools in the state. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri is banning the sale of foods containing Delta 8 and other unregulated cannabis compounds. Governor Mike Parson announced an executive order making the products illegal to sell in Missouri starting next month. The order only applies to unregulated psychoactive hemp-derived compounds. Products with Delta 9 THC, the primary psychoactive ingredient in marijuana, are legal in Missouri and not affected by the order. Products with CBD are not affected either because CBD is not psychoactive. At the press conference announcing the order, Parson held up normal-looking bags of candy that he says contained cannabis compounds and called their packaging a risk to children.
Now, how many of us have seen our kids with a little lunch pail going to school that's got these products in them for a snack? This is the kind of stuff that's happened.
The ban is set to take effect September 1st. Proposed changes to St. Louis's 110-year-old governing charter are a step closer to the November ballot. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Lippman has more on what's next after yesterday's vote.
Aldermen gave first-round approval to four bills. They'll vote to send them to the mayor next week. If she signs them, the changes would be on the November ballot. One bill that Aldermen did not advance on Thursday creates an elected public advocate who could evaluate government policies and would be the city's custodian of records. That means the board had to add a meeting next week to meet deadlines. Sixth Ward Alderwoman Daniela Velazquez says she hopes the position moves forward at that meeting.
I think we'll see who's committed to getting the Charter Commission recommendations to the ballot.
Velazquez says a text-based survey showed broad support for the idea of a public advocate. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
The University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign has more students who want to live in the dorms this year than it has space for. Chris Axtman Barker is a spokesperson for University Housing. He says their priority is making sure first-year students and those required to live in residence halls can do so.
They don't have as many tools, right? They haven't lived away from home before in many cases. And we want to make sure that those people have all the tools and support from University Housing and from the University of Illinois that they need.
University Housing is offering returning students $2,000 plus meal plans to move off campus. Axtman Barker says about 300 students have so far accepted the offer. A university-wide spokesperson said this year is unique because of delays with federal financial aid forms and uncertainty around the end of affirmative action. A decade ago, Ferguson was thrust into the spotlight after a white police officer killed Michael Brown Jr. His death sparked months-long demonstrations and protests that fueled change. People in the area say there's been progress over the last 10 years, and there are still some challenges. St. Louis Public Radio's Andrea Henderson reports.
Not too many people outside the St. Louis area had heard of Ferguson until a white police officer killed Michael Brown Jr. on August 9, 2014. A powder keg of emotions led enraged protesters to burn down the Quick Trip gas station in Ferguson near West Florissant Avenue and Northwinds Estates Drive. And now that exact location is a community hub run by the Urban League of Metropolitan St. Louis and Salvation Army. me. Inside sits the week-long art exhibit, As I See You, which lifts up Brown's life.
As soon as you walk in, you just instantly just feel like the chills.
That's Malik Taylor, a local rapper and the community center's youth job coach. Taylor takes a look at the photos of the Black Lives Matter protests, a huge painting of Brown that hangs from the ceiling, and a life-size sculpture of him as a student.
Feel like it's 10 years ago again, kind of. And I think that's the purpose of it, to put you in that mindset so that we don't forget.
Melanie Randalls helped with the exhibit. The 38-year-old mother moved to Ferguson 3 months before the uprisings. The community organizer says over the years, it seems Black residents have learned to take better care of themselves.
To understanding mental health, to understanding the stages of grief, how PTSD has inadvertently affected many of us.
Randall says many Black residents still suffer from the trauma of over-policing, and it changed the way residents interact with police. Long before Brown's death, the city of Ferguson had big problems with policing and ticketing. In 2015, the Department of Justice investigated Ferguson's police and municipal courts. It found the courts violated residents' civil rights and called for changes in policies. Some thought a new police chief would help remedy the situation. Since Brown's death, there's been 5 permanent police chiefs in Ferguson. Randall says Black drivers may not be pulled over as much, but the relationship with police is still frayed.
You just keep changing the people that's going to have to keep operating under the same system until the system that we are fighting against is dismantled and a new system is created. We are fighting an uphill battle.
The head of St. Louis County NAACP, John Bowman, agrees that policing is still a concern, but he says there's been improvement in other areas.
You even have health care centers built over there now. The other thing I think that has really been a positive direction is the number of Black business owners in Ferguson. They have grown tremendously.
Bowman says one of the movement's greatest accomplishments is the rise in young Black politicians, community organizers, and activists. Of those politicians is Ella Jones, Ferguson's first Black mayor, who was elected in 2020. At the grand opening of a community center in the area, Jones says there's still much work to do when it comes to race relations in Ferguson. Jones says her toughest challenge is getting people involved in city government to help create inclusivity.
You have to be mindful that no growth, no equality, no diversity can happen without people. And it cannot happen without people who are not willing to work together to move not only their ideas forward, but move the community forward.
And Black residents in Ferguson say that's exactly what's needed to make sure there's positive change in their city 10 years after the uprisings. I'm Andrea Henderson, St. Louis Public Radio.
The annual Tennessee Williams Festival St. Louis is underway with a production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That's one of Williams' best-known works. The festival also includes some of his least known plays from his early days in St. Louis, before he transferred out of Washington University and sought fame elsewhere. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports, a trio of short plays shows how Williams studied the reflection of showbiz glamour that he found at the movies.
Many people first encountered the work of Tennessee Williams through film adaptations. There's been more than 20 of them, including 4 movies based on the Glass Menagerie. That play is informed by Williams' time working in a downtown St. Louis office in the 1930s. Listen closer, and Menagerie also gives a sense of what the 20-something writer did with his free time in those days.
I've had enough. I'm going.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the movies.
Why do you go to the movies all the time?
I go to the movies, Mother, because I like adventure.
That's a film from 1950. But before Williams inspired that and many other films, it was the cinema that inspired him.
I think he was influenced by the movies more than real life at that point in his career.
That's theater director Brian Holfeld. He's directing the trio of short plays under the title Life Upon the Wicked Stage. Each play centers on an actress who is contemplating leaving or returning to life in the theater. But young Williams didn't yet know much about that world. Williams scholar Tom Mitchell says the playwright got a sense of theater life from the only view he could access in St. Louis.
He would come down to watch movies in that Grand Center area. And so he was really introduced to show business through those big movie theaters.
Those movies and touring musicals that visited town shaped his view of showbiz people, like the ones in these plays, including a fading actress with a touring show who is looking for an escape chute in the form of a husband. Here are actors Julie Layton and Gary Wayne Baker running some lines.
I can't go on with the show. I'm sick of it. It's like being tied to the tail of a runaway horse. One town and the next and the next. Why don't you cut me loose from it, Richard? Why don't you catch me in your arms and let me rest for a while?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Have I bored you, Richard?
Not at all. You gave a very convincing performance.
This production also has a few songs to help the parts flow together and add a cabaret element. Performances happen in the Curtain Call Lounge. That's the bar with an entrance that connects to the lobby of the Fabulous Fox Theater, where Tennessee Williams very well may have seen some of the films that inspired the plays.
Shall we warm up?
On a recent weeknight, in the Forest Park-facing apartment of musical director and pianist Tom Clear, the cast has its first musical rehearsal. The actors work through the song that provides the title for the program. It's a tune from Showboat, in which an actress humorously explains that showbiz is overrated, and if she could just find a sensible man, she'd quit the show. Layton is singing lead.
If some gentlemen would talk with reason, I would cancel all next season.
And there might be a laugh there, too.
I hope. I'm gonna sell it hard.
Layton says these early plays aren't that recognizable as the work of Tennessee Williams, but they do share a quality that would become more evident in his mature work.
I've always found that Tennessee Williams understands a woman really well. And the words I get to say, the intention I have in that last play, are very authentic to any woman of any time period.
So Williams hadn't yet found his voice in these plays, but they reflect a necessary step he took along the way, feeding his imagination with the view of the world he could only see in St. Louis movie theaters. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Our David Kozaris edited that report. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Brian Moline, in for Abby Larico.